Had you visited the Hirshhorn Museum in Washington, D.C. a couple of years ago, you might have been disturbed, intrigued, disgusted, or enthralled. Maybe all of that and more. The focal exhibit in the museum was entitled Damage Control, Art and Destruction Since 1950. At the entrance to the exhibit, Piano Destruction Concert played, an art performance video filmed on the exhibition's opening night. Over the course of a disconcerting almost half hour, the artist, Rafael Ortiz, sits at a grand piano as if to play it, then proceeds instead to stand, walk around, and with deliberate strokes and blows of an axe, slowly destroy the piano. Capturing what a Smithsonian magazine review called the beauty, irony, and transgression of the exhibit, in another film, a smiling woman in cheery attire strolls jauntily down a city sidewalk, pausing only to swing a large object she is carrying, smashing windows of cars parked at the curb. In a distressing transgression, the well-known Chinese artist Ai Weiwei is featured in the photographic triptych Dropping a Han Dynasty Urn, a piece titled with painful literalism. What was going on? What prompted these artists to engage in this kind of obliteration? And what possessed a prominent museum to give their ruinous acts attention? Smithsonian reviewer Vicky Gahn set the exhibit in a larger context, describing the ways artists post Hiroshima and Nagasaki have explored a new militant strain of destructive art that responded to political and social realities. One of the co-creators of the Hirshhorn exhibit described it as a spectacle you are drawn to. If so, it was one offering a profound paradox. Each artist's creation entailed an act of destruction. Destruction, the curator explained, as something horrendous, but also something beautiful. We find a precedent for this way of thinking in, of all places, religion. Yes, religion. While some offer the incurious assumption that religion is simple, even single-minded, in reality, religion in many forms focuses most intently on life's most profound paradoxes. As an example, for millennia, the world's religions have wrestled with the very paradox at play in the exhibit, the strangely entwined relationship between creation and destruction. One of the ways that particular paradox, what we might call creative destruction, shows up is in the stories we've told about goddesses and gods. You heard just a moment ago about Oya, the so-called mother of chaos. From the West African Yoruba Orisa tradition, a religion predating Christianity by centuries, Oya is embodied in tornadoes, hurricanes, violent storms. But her destructive tendencies are not ends in themselves. Rather, as Tobe Malore Coriel tells us, Oya destroys in order to cleanse, to renew. Her destruction clears the way for new life. Some form, Coriel writes, some form of disruption or death always heralds rebirth and transformation. Oya is hardly alone in the pantheon of the world's religions. Consider Kali, she who Joseph Campbell called the terrible one of many names. Kali was shown on the screen when you entered. For Hindus, Kali, in poet May Sarton's words, is the built-in destroyer, savage goddess. Kali, too, wreaks havoc, wearing a garland of skulls and a skirt of dismembered arms, a sword in one of her several hands, a freshly severed head dripping blood in another. According to the mythology, Kali destroys illusions. Kali obliterates egos. One description of Kali recognizes a person who is attached to his or her ego will not be receptive to Mother Kali, and she will appear in fearsome form. A person attached to his ego. I will admit I have been praying to Kali recently, asking that she pay a particularly ominous visit to, I digress. Though out of destruction she comes, her aim is a life freed of illusion, from ego's entrapment. She's creating, preserving, and destroying, affirms the 19th century Indian mystic Sri Ramakrishna. Her destruction proves liberating. Depicted beside Kali as you entered was Shamunda, a Hindu and Jain deity. She too is fierce, ominous, is a destroyer. She too uses destruction as a means of creation. There's similar stories in the Hebrew Bible. No sooner had the whole created order gotten going than it veers far off course. Yahweh determines the only hope for the planet is to send a flood. One that will first destroy and then create anew. Faith-filled Jews annually recite their Exodus tale. Central to that story is a series of macabre divine plagues, ending with the death of Egyptian children. Then, of course, Moses, playing the role of Charlton Heston, leads his people safely through the water, only to see it devastate their former enslavers. Liberation, in that case, relies upon destruction. Some dismiss these myths as nothing more than the pathetic mutterings of the primitives. What nonsense. All this talk of goddesses of destruction, gods who act as destroyers. What explains such tales other than superstitious anxiety? And what personal meaning could we possibly find in them? Could it be our Aboriginal forebears weren't just looking up, imagining some mysterious otherworldly realm, but we're mostly looking around, trying to make sense out of the world they lived in. A world in which the annual devastating flooding of rivers provided the necessary conditions for their crops to flourish and their lives to continue. A world in which it was obvious that death provided life as they witnessed animals preying upon one another. A world in which an annual cycle turned the circle between bounty and barrenness. Creation, devastation, creation, life, death, perennially entwined. You see, those primitive stories aren't so far from our reality. Confronted with such myths, some of us ask, not was it true, did it happen, but rather, why would they tell a tale like that? Not is it true, but what is the truth in it? The seemingly universal tale of creative destruction may not indicate some innate malicious bloodthirstiness on the part of religion. It may instead point to life as we experience it. Growing wild around our country and throughout the world is a tall, hardy, showy wildflower, a member of the prodigious evening primrose family. It's called fireweed, a name derived because it grows rapidly in areas destroyed by burning. After the bombing of London, it was fireweed that first appeared, offering an inspiring profusion of color into a landscape still grim with devastation. So too with certain kinds of redwoods. Their small cones contain hundreds of tiny seeds, but only the heat of a forest fire can cause some cones to open and release their seeds to the wind. What the Hirshhorn Museum exhibited, what those goddesses and gods depict, what these and other examples in nature reflect, is the same phenomenon: creative destruction. The entwined cycle of destroying and creating, creating and destroying. The contemporary Turkish writer Mehmet Murat Ildin addresses a more personal aspect of that experience. Referring to our inner landscape, he acknowledges we don't like the storms because they challenge us. For this very reason exactly, we must like them. U.S. author Bryant McGill takes that thought and runs with it. The storm is out there, and every one of us must eventually face the storm. McGill believes parts of our lives are akin to fireweed and redwood cones. They simply will not come to life in times of calm. Being broken open by the storm, he writes, is your only hope. When you are broken open, you get to discover what is inside you. Some people never get to see what is inside them, he writes. What beauty, what strength, what truth and love. Haven't Oya's storms been a part of your life? Haven't you been wounded by Kali's sword? If not by name, then certainly by experience, Chamunda is a familiar force to us. No doubt there are those here this morning who find themselves in the middle of some ominous storm. Right now. A storm that feels so destructive. Novelist Cormac McCarthy offers this vivid picture. Shrouded in the black thunderheads, the distant lightning glowed mutely, like welding seen through foundry smoke. As if repairs were underway at some flawed place in the iron dark of the world. There is truth for us in that. The same personal storms that feel destructive may also be creating. What if what breaks us has also the potential to heal, even inspire us? Let me be clear. This is not the call to become foolhardy storm chasers, courting destruction, acting in self-destructive ways. This is not at all, please hear me, this is not at all excusing emotional, verbal, physical abuse by touting its potential to benefit us in some way. Not that at all. This is about acknowledging that life's journey is lived between creation and destruction, where both may have a beneficial role. We recently committed ourselves to be a place fostering spiritual transformation, spiritual transformation, affirmation, acceptance, peace, following your bliss. These certainly have their place, especially in these times. But if we are serious about this journey, then we must accept that the path toward personal spiritual transformation doesn't always lead beside still waters and into green pastures. The call to new life, a life of deepened spiritual meaning, will not always sound invitingly melodic. Sometimes lightning will rend our sky. Thunder shake us to our very bones. A gale force wind whisk away parts of us. And in their place, like fireweed after a raging blaze, new life will appear. That 13th century Islamic mystic Jalaluddin Rumi counseled, "This being human, this being human is a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome. And entertain them all. Even if they are a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture, still treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful. Be grateful for whatever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond." Well, I'm not grateful, that is. Depression, meanness, my own crowd of sorrows are not welcomed guests in my psyche. The seasons of inner unrest fill me with anxiety and dread. And they have been at times, they are in these times, my teachers, my guides, my sources of personal creative destruction, forcing me out of some unhelpful way and offering me instead the potential for powerful personal transformation. Out of destruction she comes, writes May Sarton, acknowledging her own anguish. But her invitation to Kali comes around to sensing, even embracing, the potential in creative destruction. She ends with a prayer. Kali, be with us. Violence, destruction, receive our homage. Help us to bring darkness into the light. Can you imagine a more important spiritual work in these times? Help us to bring darkness into the light. To lift out the pain, the anger, where it can be seen for what it is. The balance wheel for our vulnerable, aching love. Put the wild hunger where it belongs, within the act of creation, crude power that forges a balance between hate and love. Help us, May Sarton prays, help us to be the always hopeful gardeners of the Spirit, who know that without darkness, nothing comes to birth, as without light, nothing flowers. Bear the roots in mind, she prays. You, the dark one, Kali, awesome power. Blessed be, and may it be so.